This is the August 25 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Elaine Cupp of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, and our special guest this week, Alex Norton. He's with Beeson & Associates out of Crestwood, Kentucky. He's been out on the Pro Farmer Crop Tour. Let's get a list of items that we ought to discuss this week. I think I will start with you, Alex. What's on your list?
The Pro Farmer Crop Tour would be the headliner, I think, kind of getting out and seeing all the crops. I did the eastern leg, so Ohio through to southern Minnesota.
We'll start with you here in just a bit and get your assessment of those crops. Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets.
Well, I too mostly just want to quiz Alex about his experiences on the crop tour. But I think the other thing to look at this week is perhaps the relationship in the entire soy complex and what is leading the losses and the edible oils sort of globally.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
I think crop size, because of the tour of what people are now thinking about corn and bean crop sizes.
And Chip Nellinger, Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Yeah, I think all of the above, plus what do we do over the next, 30 to 75 days here? There's going to be maybe not some flat price decisions to be made, but a lot of basis and logistics issues, and that takes a lot of planning, and there could be a lot of volatility from that standpoint as well.
Let's start, Alex, with you. Tell me about your 4 days out on the Pro Farmer Crop Tour.
Sure, yeah. We started in around Columbus, Ohio, and then each day kind of worked a little bit further west. So I was a driver this year. I think this is my fourth or fifth time out on the tour. So, we were kind of hitting the different parts. I think a lot of the interest was in that first day with western Ohio and eastern Indiana, as they, of all the areas in the Corn Belt, I think, they were kind of concerned with some of the heat and dryness around pollination time. My particular route on that day was a little further south than maybe the major problem areas. And so I saw a pretty decent corn crop. Some of the other scouts I talked to saw a little bit of a rougher corn and soybean patch a little bit further north. But as we worked further into, Indiana and Illinois, Illinois saw, a pretty good crop, plenty of moisture in really all the fields across the way. In Iowa, my particular route was a little bit closer to the river on the east side of the state. And so I don't think I was quite in the, when you think of Iowa farmland and the great corn ears, I didn't really see maybe the incredible stuff, but I don't think I was in the prime area necessarily. And then just this afternoon, kind of getting into Minnesota, saw actually some really good corn crops. I think that's a quick overview. Plenty of moisture in the ground, less of a factor, obviously, for corn that's further developed. But as soybeans finish out, they should have plenty of moisture to kind of fill out those last few pods at the top of the plant. So, happy to go into any more detail, but that's kind of a quick overview of what I saw so far.
I'd like to take you back to Ohio, especially because you ran a more southern route. Of course, the United States Department of Agriculture has a 163 as of this time on the statewide average. The crop tour average at 148, or right at 149, is well below that. Chip blamed that on... And so did Brian Grady, who we talked to all week, on the tour not getting below Columbus and probably some better crop areas. Do you recall what your average for your route happened to be? Was it much better than the rest of the state?
Yeah, so for that first day for Ohio, my car's average was 163.6. Obviously better than the 149 for the tour. And I guess right in line with what the USDA has for the state. Obviously, I was just kind of if you go straight across west from Columbus, Dublin, that was kind of my route, peaking a little bit south. So, it was a, not necessarily a bin buster, but I was kind of expecting to see a little bit more issue than I did.
When you all gathered in the evenings, each evening, and started to compare notes, did you have some common themes for each state? For instance, did you all think that Ohio's number was too low from the tour, and that USDA's was more on target? Were there some things for Indiana and for Illinois as well?
I think the general thing before we get in each state is probably that most people think the 175 national is a little too high. As the week has gone on, we saw Ohio was 149, 175 is way too high. And then you see some decent stuff in Indiana and it's like, oh, maybe it's just a couple bushels. So I think when we kind of think state by state, maybe 149 was a little too low, because as you mentioned, I believe you said, Chip or Pete talked about in the previous week, where we only sampled kind of a western and side of Ohio from Columbus, and we missed a greater part of the state that probably had some better stuff. So 149 likely was a little misrepresented, for being a little bit too low. And then let's see, Indiana. Let me just look at what we had. I think the tour had 173 for Indiana. My car was closer to 170-ish, so a little bit below that. So I think for Indiana, from a corn perspective, it was maybe a little off at 173, but that's probably about right. Didn't seem to have as much dispute for what was expected versus what was found for Indiana.
Do any of the rest of you have questions you want to ask about the tour of Alex? Elaine, I think you maybe were thinking about something.
I do, absolutely. A couple of things. First of all, and these are questions for not only Alex, but for you too, Todd, because I have learned a lot from watching your Twitter feed all week during this tour. But Alex, can you tell me what your impression is of the Kentucky crop? I mean, the crop even farther east or farther south than where the tour goes, and that will build into something that I'm going to pester Todd about.
Okay, I would love to give you some ammunition to pester Todd, but I really haven't done much touring around my home state, to be honest. I'm basically in Louisville, Kentucky, so I see a few things, as I'm out driving around, but I would not be doing a good job if I just made something up. I can't really tell you much.
Fair enough. And the question is just, you mentioned that most of the tour participants have this consensus that the 175 national is too high. And I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Probably everybody here agrees with that. But one thing that Todd has pointed out this week, he had a nice chart that sort of demonstrated how year by year, the crop tour does tend to have lower numbers than the USGA mm-hmm. numbers ultimately turn out to be. And that is sort of flies in the face of the idea that perhaps the crop tour is not seeking out some of the corn on the fringes of the Corn Belt, right? It's not going up into North Dakota.
Right.
It's not going, far west in Nebraska. So I don't know. I mean, the two things aren't in agreement. So I guess, Todd mm-hmm. what do you think about this idea that are we going to really learn something about the crop size if the tour consistently is below the USDA numbers?
Well, I think you have to understand, and Chip Flory has been on the show many times with us over the last decade, talking about the tour and the difference between what the tour comes up with and what the numbers really are. And I think they're not usually very far off the final number, according to what I read this particular week. However, they do understand, especially in Nebraska, that they're low, and that's based on the number of irrigated fields that they get into. So that number, when you hear it, is really off. Something like 15 to 20 bushels Nebraska this at 158. 6 this year. USDA has them at 187, so that's in line, right? And, well, close to in line, I suppose. The three-year average there is 161. Then Pro Farmer, at the end of the week, releases a set of numbers that are adjusted.
Mm-hmm.
So that Pro Farmer has its own set of numbers and that the tour has its own set of numbers. I think it's fun to watch and a lot of fun to have people in the fields taking a look at what the crops are like and watching it on Twitter or watching it on the website, because that's where I posted a lot of the Twitter feed too, can make for some really interesting conversation. But the bottom line is that the USDA numbers are the USDA numbers, and once we get to September, the attention will turn back to them, and they have the final say-so no matter what really comes out of the tour. And I think Chip Lorre and the rest of the crew would understand that as well.
I think, this is Pete, I think the tour itself, they go the same route every year. So the tour from year to year, you can look back and see, is it better or worse than last year or where it was in the past? And I don't think you can compare it then to the USDA, because the USDA uses different things. When Pro Farmer comes out on Friday, the tour is one little factor they use in their own set of fact in their own set. It doesn't really change their numbers much. They can be way off from what the tour said. So I think the tour basically says, compared to last year, we're finding this, not this. And I think that's what we have to keep in mind of what the tour does.
Chip Nellinger, you have been with us for a little bit. You want to talk about logistics and basis. I think that's a good idea to explore at this point. What are your thoughts about logistics? Because it's a big crop that's got to be put away somewhere.
It is. So my fear is this, that regardless of crop size, even if the yield ultimately comes down a little bit and futures rally 30 or 40 cents, my fear is that, say a 40-cent futures rally, they're going to take 15 to 20 of it in basis, and vice versa. If we dip back down closer to $3, say we take another 25, 30 cents off of the futures, then basis probably improves 8 to 10 cents. My point is, we may be stuck in a rut here for the foreseeable future, at least out till, you know, maybe the end of the year here, and then it becomes an issue of, you know, how do we get this crop put away and stored and marketed? And, you know, that can mean dollars and cents in a producer's pocket. So, you know, I think basis is a big part of this, and that's kind of a missing link in a lot of producers' mind, is how to play that basis. So I think that could be maybe a competitive advantage by watching the basis, taking advantage of basis strength, you know, on dip backs here to lock some of that in, because regardless, whether it's a 170 crop or a 175 crop, it's, I think everyone's going to agree, it's a big crop. And despite big demand, it's going to take a while. The demand just doesn't show up overnight. It's going to take a while to use that crop up. So, you know, we've got to, I think, really refocus on basis this year, and using on-farm storage to the best of our ability. And that's not for hoping for higher prices. That's to merchandise and capture carry and capture, you know, basis. So I think that's an important point in consideration in producers' minds right now.
So this is a little bit, and I think this is this distinction different than the basis play made with soybeans earlier this year, where you were really playing on the idea that the price of soybeans probably was too low.
Yes. This is more from a standpoint of, all right, if we've got storage, there's good carry in the corn market. How do we lock that in? Because if we go sideways for 90 days, we're going to lose that carry. So if it's unpriced bushels in the bin, you know, you're going to lose that carry unless we do something to lock it in. Likewise, depending on where you're at in the country, Eastern Corn Belt has some historically fairly good basis right now, and will likely continue because of the shortfall maybe in yields in Ohio and portions of northern Indiana. So I think if you're in the Eastern Corn Belt, you're going to have a lot of basis opportunities, probably more so than the Western Corn Belt. And so it depends on where you're at. But combined, we've built a lot of on-farm storage the last few years, and, you know, I think producers have to understand that's not necessary to just hold grain off the market and hope for higher prices, because in a carried market like this that we've got in corn, you do that, we go sideways for 3 months. You lose the carry, and you're going sideways. But, you know, likely there's a cost to hold that grain, and especially if you're you're borrowing money, operating money to do that.
I'd like to check in with the other three of you on corn, and then we'll switch into soybeans. Pete Manhart, what are your thoughts here on marketing of new crop corn?
Well, how much are you going to pay for storage? What's that going to cost you? Should you just sell out of the field and replace it with a call? If you store it, you've got storage costs plus what the price does if it stays flat. If you sell it, you can probably spend less on that to buy decent calls and have coverage clear out into March.
I think, Alex, I'll check in with you next.
For the folks that we generally deal with, it's the people buying it. And so for what we're looking at, you know, as we kind of are, what, Dees is at 332, we've kind of had a looking at 320, you know, just kind of having targets not far from where we are now, and kind of looking out into next year. And from a user perspective, obviously that's different than, from the producer side.
So your clientele base isn't farmers. Are you merchandising for the river? Are you merchandising for?
We actually are. Yeah, we do kind of risk management for food manufacturing, restaurant, consumer packaged good companies. So all the way at the kind of end user of the commodity. And so our job is to kind of help protect margins, kind of come up with strategies that, lower prices are always better for our clients. Obviously that's not the case for producers, but we're trying to, protect margins for the finished good, basically.
So you're not of the mind that prices can go a lot lower for corn then?
No, we're not. I think, you get kind of similar years, maybe tip down to $3, but I think a lot of the bearish news is in. We know it's going to be a big crop, as was mentioned earlier. You know, whether it's 170 or 175, it's still going to be a big crop, and we know that. So, maybe we get another dip down a little bit lower, but we don't really think there's a huge amount of downside left from a futures perspective.
Elaine Cubb, your thoughts on marketing corn?
I agree with what everybody said here, is that from a buyer's perspective, there are probably opportunities here to lock in the futures at a low. But from a farmer's perspective, like Chip says, we really do have to be proactive about locking in basis costs. I'll give a Western Corn Belt perspective on this. Just looking at ethanol plant bids here in the Omaha area, new crop basis is like 33 under. So that's normal. That's pretty much a normal year. And going into a big crop, 14.9 billion bushels, 15 billion bushels, whatever it happens to be, it is going to be big. But hopefully, and I'm putting this out there for other people to weigh in on, I don't think that we're expecting to see a 2013 or a 2014 scenario where the rail markets are going to get all bungled up and not be able to handle this size of a crop. I think the big crop will logistically be handled by the industry, and basis, hopefully, fingers crossed, isn't going to fall apart to a dollar under in the Dakotas, but it is probably going to be weighed upon by the size of this crop.
Alex, I'm going to come back to you at this time. I want you to switch gears and talk about what you found in soybeans.
From a soybean perspective, I'll just kind of give a real quick rundown of what the tour does. I guess it's a little too early for an actual yield calculation. So they do a pod count in a 3-foot by 3-foot square of field and kind of use that as an indicator. So, there's still time for the pods to fill. And so that it's a little bit trickier to kind of compare to the USDA number because you're just looking at pod counts. But first day for Ohio, my car was almost 1,200 pods in that 3-foot by 3-foot row, and the tour was 1,055. So, very good pod count for that. In Indiana, my car again was 1,300 for the pod count, and the average for the tour was 1,178. Nebraska, which obviously I wasn't on, was 1,223. So, most of the states, the pod count was pretty good. I think the overall, I didn't mention Illinois, sorry. My Illinois average was 1165. So I was a little bit lower, but again, my route in Illinois was not necessarily the ideal farmland maybe, but I think the overriding thing from people in my car and then other people we talked to was, you know, where most of the pod counts are pretty good, up from a year ago, and there's not a single field that I went into that had any lack of moisture for the crop to finish. And so, you know, just talking to some of our other farmers in the car, you know, they'd say, you know, if we have that, you get another 5 to 10 bushels an acre just because you have good moisture kind of going into the start of September. And so I think, you know, whereas corn may be a little bit overstated from a national perspective at 175, and I don't think, again, on corn, it's a huge difference. But for soybeans, I think the USDA number very much is a possibility and could creep maybe modestly higher. I'm not sure about that, but I definitely think the soybean crop should be very good.
Pete Banhart, for corn, this kind of crop size has been seen, relatively speaking, before in terms of how far it deviates above previous years. However, for the beans, USDA, the crop tour has found says this one just is a soybean monster, that it is a big crop, and it will cause some problems, I suppose, for producers at some point in time, won't it?
I think, you know, in general, it is, the tour has said beans are going to be bigger than expected, and that we need to be protecting the downside from going much lower. And I think if we do have that big bean crop, beans could go another dollar without any problem. Whereas the corn, I think, is going to be a smaller crop size. In this area, corn's not near as good as 14. I mean, 20, 40 bushel less. But the beans are unknown, but just the pod count being bigger and bigger gives people the idea that the number could be over 50. And I think that was in the news today, helping push those beans down.
Yeah, I would agree with Pete. There's a pretty well-advertised seasonal tendency as well for the month of September for bean prices to have a sharp break and really right into the first week of October. So, I mean, kind of following along right in those lines, the Pro Farmer pod counts as they moved into Illinois and Iowa, some of those were just massive, you know, 1,500 to 1,800 pods. We got more rain in most areas in the last 48 hours. So it looks like it's a perfect August for beans. I would say, though, that you repeat the whole cycle. So, yeah, I don't disagree. You could push these beans maybe down to $9 over the next 4 or 5 weeks, but I don't know if we stay there very long because demand is so big. China demand isn't going to go away. You replay the whole process with what does Brazil plant and produce? Do they run into any weather problems? And so, you know, I think that's an opportunity for beans that were sold at higher levels to get some calls bought longer term. I don't think you can count the bean market out, but the path of least resistance, at least for a few weeks, may be lower.
I would agree with that as far as lower prices now. And what do lower prices bring? More usage. The more usage we have, we're going to turn from the crop size being big to the usage being even bigger.
Elaine Cubb, I'm going to guess that you agree with the fundamentals here about the size of this soybean crop, but however, you might have a different view on what is leading the losses.
Yeah, I think that if you look at the timing of when the bubble sort of burst in the Malaysian palm oil market, there could be some sort of fund arbitrage going on here. And I would say even without knowing a thing about how the U.S. soybean crop looked, it's not surprising to see soybeans collapse by 30 cents, you know, here on Thursday, and corn not collapsing by that same degree, because I'll be more apocalyptic than Pete and Chip here, and I will say that I just quick did the math, and if December corn stayed at this exact price of $3.32, soybeans could fall to $8.30 to reach their normal price relationship with corn. So that's even more than the dollar that Pete is willing to take off of this market. I don't think that's going to happen immediately, especially because, like Chip mentioned, about the Brazil still needs to buy some soybean acres. But I'm just saying that that's how bad it could get.
Can we talk a little bit about the correlation here with the Malaysian palm oil? It has to do, I think, with actually with El Nino and the palm oil production in this last year. But this is about the time we were expecting, if I'm remembering correctly, that we might see this begin to correct itself. Have you been following it closely enough?
Yeah, so back in the spring, there was a rally in palm oil based on the La Nina shortage of production in Indonesia and Malaysia itself. But now we're getting into the season where there should be more of it coming online. But there was sort of an artificial bubble here this month in August due to complications of certain providers weren't using the right sustainability measures. And so the Chinese demand that is very strong for edible oils right now, it was hard for certain suppliers to meet that demand. Like I said, it's sort of artificial, and that bubble was very vulnerable to being corrected. And I think that probably the funds noticed that that was the end of it this week for, or last week, really last Wednesday was probably the day that palm oil reached its craziest moment, and it's all kind of downhill from there.
And so we're just talking about total vegetable oil use and availability across the whole planet with this particular side of the fundamental. So it really is that is a demand-driven function then.
Yeah, and like Chip said, China is driving the demand here too for all edible oils, soybean oil, soybeans, everything. Yep.
Elaine, just curious, how much do you think palm oil, you know, maybe Gulf price or whatever, how much do you think that has on the downside? Just curious of your thoughts.
Well, I guess I haven't really, I'd have to do a little bit more math, but, you know, it fell only 1% today, while the entire soybean complex was falling 2 or 3%. So I think it has a lot farther to fall just to catch up even with soybeans.
All right. I think we have reached the point, unless somebody has another topic of discussion, where we can wrap up and get our final words. I think, Pete Manhart, let's start with you. What's your final word for the day?
I think we need to be protecting bean prices. Remember, we went up over $3. We could see that disappear. So we need to be protecting those. Corn, need to look at all kind of prospects of, do we still buy puts, do we sell and buy calls, what can we do to get more out of the crop? And we talked about basis, but we need to be looking at ways to manufacture some money along with the price that we sell it at.
Pete Manhart is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, your final words?
Well, I would follow along with what Pete said. Refigure what your yields are right now based on and divide that into what your total costs are. That's going to give you what you need out of this crop. Have a plan going forward on where you're going to sell. Have a plan on basis. Have a plan on cash flow. If you intend to hold this crop on corn out into June, July of next year, we got to make sure we can handle the cash flow and get the costs covered that we need for the 17. So now's not the time. I know it's about to get busy in the field. Refocus, have a plan on the markets and basis and risk management.
Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska.
I would say watch for volatility in the U.S. dollar here at the end of this week and certainly going into next week in reaction to Fed statements about future interest rate rises.
Alex Norton is with Beeson Associates out of Crestwood, Kentucky. Your final word for the day.
I think timing is the word. You know, it's easy to kind of get lost in the big direction and say, well, we're going lower for beans or we're, you know, maybe have some upside here or whatever. But I think either from my job, it's the buying perspective, but for selling, you know, you kind of get a little bit of a rally or a little bit of a shift and just being kind of prepared with some targets in mind for what you're working towards that work for your books, I think is an important thing and being prepared to kind of pull that trigger when you see something that works and in a shift in the market or a technical trend or something like that. But it's easy to look at the big picture and say, well, we're never going to get back, but, you know, low prices come and demand will pick up and kind of give it spikes here and there. So just being prepared for those opportunities from either a buyer perspective or a seller perspective is very important.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find the whole of our program online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Again, our thanks to our panelists and guests this week, including Alex Norton of Beeson & Associates, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.